Metallica, here they come, the kings of metal!
Hey, this is Michael Wagner, and you're listening to Metal Up Your Podcast.
Never opened myself this way. Life is ours, we live it our way. All these words I don't just say, and nothing else matters.
Welcome to Metal Up Your Podcast. I'm Ethan Luck.
And I am Brad Blazek.
That's right. Brad Blazek, everybody. Give it up for Brad Blazek right off the bat. Unfortunately, Clint is taking the week off. He's not feeling so great, but that's fine because we've got our good friend Brad Blazek. You know him very well. He's been on the show before. And, dude, thank you for filling in.
Oh, yeah. Anytime, man. I it's a pleasure to do it.
Even on a Titans Sunday. The Titans are currently playing right now, and you're missing the Titans game. Well, you got it on. I see you over your shoulder.
Yeah,
your daughter's watching it.
It's in the background.
So at least you could check in on the score. Who are they playing, the Colts?
The Las Vegas Raiders.
That's right, the Raiders. I just took a wild guess and named a team. I'm not a huge football guy, but the Raiders used to be in my home state originally. So.
Yeah, that's right.
I've been to two football games in my entire life. One was a Raiders game, one was a Rams game, and they are no longer both. Well, the Rams are back in Southern California.
the luck curse.
I guess. I don't know if it's a curse if I've never really been a huge football fan. But
yeah. Well, if people want to go back and like watch the game and they want to line this up, it's the fourth quarter and the Titans are up 24-13.
Well, hey, there you go. So. All right, tighten up, everybody. Well, if you're joining us for the first time, we are an All Metallica podcast. Like we said at the top of the show, Clint is not with us this week. He is at home just chilling, giving him the week off. And Brad is so graciously stepping in. And we're happy you're here. If you're listening for the first time, welcome. We're happy you're here. We're happy you're on the train, all aboard, choo-choo, or whatever you want to say. And this week we're going to do something kind of fun. We have kind of touched on this over the almost 6 years of this podcast. We've talked about our very first Metallica shows, but I don't know if we've really gone into excruciating detail about our very first experiences at our very first Metallica shows. Brad's was with Clint, so he'll get into that. And mine was in Australia on my birthday, which you know those details if you've been listening for a number of years. But it'd be kind of fun just to just kind of tell our stories of our very first Metallica shows. What do you say, Brad?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I think everyone's heard Clint's side, but now you get to hear my side of that.
That's right.
Show.
Now we're going to hear the truth.
Yeah.
We're going to hear what really happened. Clint did pee his pants. Now we're going to have a good time. I thought this would be a really fun, this was all very last minute, by the way. You know, yeah. Brad, thankfully, you know, he's got the Titans game over his shoulder, but he stepped in at last minute notice. Very grateful for that. But we're going to get into some news. There's not much going on in Metallica world, unfortunately, because we want some new stuff to happen. But we're going to go through the housekeeping here real quick. We get to some emails, and then we're going to talk about our very first shows. You want to get into it, man?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, let's do it. Well, in the news, not much, like I said, is happening, but the Global Citizens Festival just happened a few nights ago. Short and sweet set list. They played Creep, Bell, Sandman, Sabbath True, Unforgiven, Rome, Nothing Else Matters, and, of course, Puppets. For such a short set, I mean, they played five songs from the Black Album,
right?
Which I guess if you're in front of an audience that big, I mean, millions and millions of people, you're going to want to play, I guess, what people know the best. But yeah. I thought that was kind of cool. And as people heard at the top of the show, I put in Mickey Guyton's version, Nothing Else Matters, which she joined them on stage for.
Now, forgive me, but I don't know who that is.
Well, Mickey Guyton is an amazing female artist who she did a cover of Nothing Else Matters on the Blacklist compilation.
Okay.
We did a multi-episode series on the Blacklist, listened to through every song on the whole thing. And her version, Nothing Else Matters, is one of the best ones on there, I got to say. So check it out when you get a chance, Brad, or you listening at home.
Okay.
But pretty cool. She, you know, someone from the Blacklist joined them on stage. You know, they don't often do special guests on stage, you know, every once in a while here and there, I guess. But pretty cool they did that in front of such a huge audience.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, that had to be a treat, you know, for the fans that know the Black, what is it called? The Blacklist?
The Blacklist.
Yeah. So That's pretty cool. It is, like you said, it's a short set, but I mean, it's just hit after hit after hit.
Yeah, it really is. You know, the only thing I thought they could have put in there if they wanted to swap out a Black Album song would have been Fuel or something like that, or maybe Memory Remains, something huge.
Right.
But I mean, pretty cool. I mean, if you were there or watching at home or on your phone, wherever, for a short and sweet set list, I mean, you're nothing but bangers, you know?
Yeah.
Pretty cool. So that's, you know, that's the only thing show wise that's that just happened. The Helping Hands concert is coming up December 16th in Los Angeles, California at the Microsoft Theater with special guests Greta Van Fleet, who are also playing an acoustic set. Obviously, this is a really cool thing going to All Within My Hands to help people in need. Every year, you know, they've been doing these. They raise a ton of money. A lot of people tune in. I'm guessing we'll get a live stream out of it, which will be really fun. And we'll cover that show. But it's just another one of those things that, you know, Metallica just does a lot of great stuff for different communities across the world. And we're really grateful for that. And we got a special guest.
Oh, we might have a couple. Yeah, that's Starlin. My nephew's knocking on the door.
I was going to guess that maybe the Titans blew a touchdown or something and your dog was pissed. All right. Well, anyways, just to wrap up the news, there wasn't much to really talk about. Nothing exciting as far as new music, things like that isn't happening yet. But yeah, the Helping Hands concert again, December 16th. We're looking forward to watching it, looking forward to see how much money they raise for charity. This is going to be always a really cool thing. And they always do some really cool special performances. And we'll see our friend Avi on stage, I'm guessing.
Definitely. That'd be awesome. Now, is this the second time they've done this or third time?
This is like the 27th time they've done this, man. What are you doing?
Okay. I guess I'm not a good Metallica fan.
This, I believe, is year three, but I could be wrong. Don't even worry about that.
Yeah.
last year was the really cool live stream one they did where they had all the kind of the cubes, you know, with all the fans that got to, you know, be a part of it and be in the background, like Sarah Sobeck was in there and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So that was really cool. But you know, that's it for specific news as far as what's happening right now. We can only hope that in this downtime, because, I mean, as of today, it's September 25th. This isn't until December 16th. I'm really hoping, and I mentioned this last week, my prediction is in that time, we're going to get a new album announcement.
Oh,
what are your
really?
Thoughts on that?
Ooh, I mean, I would love that, but man, that would be awesome. You really
I mean,
think
there's,
they...
I mean it seems like from what I can tell that they're done with the record. I don't know if it's all mixed and mastered, whatever, but I feel like there's a lot of downtime coming up here, and those guys aren't usually, even when they're off the road, there's still things are kind of thrown out there to get us all happy and stoked on anything Metallica. And in my opinion, the next kind of best thing they could do is get us all excited about a new album. And so my prediction, which I said last week, sometime this fall, they're going to announce it for like a spring release. That's my prediction.
Yeah, that would be amazing. That would be fun because, I mean, when was Hardwired released?
Hardwired was 2016.
Yeah, I guess it is time.
I mean, it'll be 6 years in November.
Yeah. COVID's just thrown everything off. Every time I think of something like, oh, that was like a year or two ago, it's like add 2 years to that.
Always, you know? That's the new rule of thumb going forward in life is to add 2 years.
So it's definitely time.
Does that mean I'm about to turn 46?
Oh man,
dang!
I'll be 50 if that's true.
Or I guess if we're not counting those 2 years, then maybe I'm 2 years younger still.
Okay, that sounds better. Good. So
I'll take that.
I'm
about to be 44.
Yeah, I'm 45 again. I'll take
perfect.
It.
That's awesome. Well, also we got a new patron this week, Zachary Lipkin Moore. So give it up for him. Round of applause, everybody. Thank you. Thank you. Oh, wow. That crowd just won't die down. They love new patrons. Well, Zachary, thank you for, we're very thankful for you jumping on the Patreon train. Every little bit helps over there. It helps us keep this podcast going, getting new stuff out to you guys, new merch, new whatever. And, all sorts of great stuff you get over there with our Cover Will Black and EPs, Lunar Satan songs, Golden West, my record, blah blah blah. So thank you very much for joining on that. Anyone can go join it. It's just a cup of coffee or a beer a week or a month, excuse me. patreon.com/metalupyourpodcast. Go check it out.
I just want to say real quick, you guys are one of the best Patreon membership things out there. You guys are always giving stuff away, tickets and the what was the mystery box? Is that still happening?
Yeah, Clint sent out the first round of those mystery boxes and with some really fun stuff in there.
Yeah, most Patreon are just kind of like, yeah, we'll give you a shout out, we'll send you a sticker, and that's it. But you guys are
right.
You know, you're on it. So,
which that's all good. I mean, you know, really the idea of Patreon is just for people to support the things they love, and not really expect anything in return. You know, I've been a patron of different podcasts over the years, and at no point have I been like, oh, I wish I got something out of this. You know,
right?
But we just thought that would be a cool thing to do. You know, just something that. Just to say thank you for supporting us, you know, and mm-hmm. we'll continue to do that as long as this podcast is going.
Yeah. Well, as a longtime patron myself, I appreciate it.
Well, we appreciate you, Brad.
Thank you.
This is one of the perks. You get to co-host the show with Ethan.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, we're on all the socials, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, Spotify, Amazon Music, blah, 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 all the stuff. You know where to find us. Just search Metal Up Your Podcast. You will find where we are. You can subscribe, and that's the best way to keep up to date with what we're doing and where we are on the road, because Clint and I are constantly on the road. We just got back last night from some Morgan Wade shows opening for Luke Combs. We were close to the West Coast out in near Reno, Nevada, in Lake Tahoe, which was mighty beautiful, by the way, I will add. Have you been out there before, Brad?
I've been to Vegas, and I stopped in Utah for a layover. That's about it.
Okay. Well, listen, Tahoe is an insanely beautiful place. It was a little chilly, which I was very excited about, because we're just entering into fall here in Nashville, where it was cool for a few days. Now it's a little warm today, but next week looks like amazingly beautiful, and it felt just like that in Tahoe, which was awesome.
No, I think you posted a couple pictures from out there. It looks pretty cool.
Yep. Oh, dude, I'm telling you, it's like paradise out there. It's one of the most beautiful lakes in the country, one of the clearest lakes. It's right on the border of California and Nevada.
Mm-hmm.
And if you ever get a chance to go to Tahoe, it's absolutely stunning. I'm sure it costs a lot to go and stay there and rent a boat or jet skis and stuff.
Yeah.
But if you can do it, it's definitely worth it. Well, hey, let's dip into what the community's talking about. We're going to go ahead and jump into the email corner. What do you say?
All right.
All right, our first email is from Rakesh Gopalan. He says, Clint, Ethan, and Paul, and let's just say Brad, I missed the chance to send a voicemail for 300, but wanted to reach out and add my gratitude for the podcast. I've been listening since episode 5, and you guys are the best. I look forward to Mondays because of the pod. I feel a slight tinge of sadness the rest of the week after I've burned down the episode. Well, cheer up, man, because here we are again. This morning, I was listening to the 300th recap on a plane, revisiting the DMB peace story, with your current day laughter on top had me laughing quietly with my AirPods like a maniac. I had to turn it off because who really laughs at a podcast in a public setting, honey, please. I do. I mean, I don't care what people think.
I do all the time.
He says, so my one request is more unchecked fits of laughter. See ya, Metal Lawyer 2, most original name ever. He says, Rakesh from Charlotte, New Jersey. Well, listen, Rakesh, I'm going to tell you this, man. No shame in laughing by yourself on an airplane with headphones on. I do it. Clint does it. Brad does it. We all do it. Mm-hmm. If anything, it just shows everybody else I'm having a good time.
Yeah, exactly.
That's how I look at it. You laugh. Do you listen to, I'm sure when you're driving, doing deliveries for your job, you're cracking up sometimes.
Oh, yeah. I'll be walking around Walmart just cracking up and doing the quick look. Like, does anyone see me laughing? But I just keep laughing anyway.
Yeah, who cares, man? Listen, I think it falls under have fun always.
I'm laughing, so I'm better than you. That's what I think if someone's like looking at me all crazy.
Yeah,
like I'm having a good time.
You're having fun always.
Why aren't you?
That's the motto. There's no problem with that, dude. So Rakesh, laugh away, dude. You have our utmost respect and our permission.
Yes, definitely.
All right, next email is for you, Brad.
Michael Grosvenor?
Grosvenor. Greetings. We call him the governor.
The governor. Okay, yeah. Greetings, fellas. Wanted to reach out and wish a belated congratulations on 300. When you put out the bat signal for voice memos, I was in the middle of a 2+ week work trip and a really cool screening of the new Billy Joel live at Yankee Stadium with the man himself in attendance. Got home after everything and fully intended to contribute, and then COVID decided to cut in line. I'm fine, by the way.
That's good.
Yeah.
It's what good that he's fine, by the way. Yeah. Oh, that's great. You got COVID. Awesome.
What can I say? You keep the Metallica flame burning strong, and the incredible community you've built around the old podcast has been such an amazing byproduct, and I'm grateful for the friends that have landed in my life as a result. Thanks for your endless friendship and for your endless support of my Billy podcast. I'd like to consider us one of the children of Metal Up Your Podcast. Here's to the next phase of the podcast, and can't wait to camp out in the Load Reload world with you all as the next sets come our way. Peace, Michael.
Well, he's talking about the box sets. That's the next thing in line for Metallica in the box set world. So, yeah, we're excited for them too. We'll see what they do. Are they going to be separate? Are they going to be one box set? We don't know. And if you haven't checked it out, you know the governor, you know Michael Grosvenor from Glass House. This is Billy Joel podcast. He also, him and Angela Gonzalez guest hosted while we were in Europe this last summer. So, Michael is a good friend of the show. His podcast is great. He does a lot of deep diving on Billy Joel. So go check that out if you're a Billy Joel fan or you want to become a Billy Joel fan, because Billy Joel was awesome.
I like him.
I mean, Billy Joel.
I grew up on him. I've got a bunch of his records. You know, I got into vinyl a couple of years ago, and I've got, I think, more than half of his.
Well, that's awesome, because yeah. I only have one Billy Joel record on
vinyl. Oh, wow. Oh,
The Stranger, and I just got it like 2 months ago or something like
that. Yeah. No, Glass Houses is one of the like first records I remember like having as a kid, and just listening to it, and the cover kind of like blew me away.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, I wish I could say I was a much deeper fan than most people, I guess. But I mean, I've listened to Billy Joel my entire life. I remember growing up, and one of the first songs I heard was Uptown Girl. You know, one of my favorite shows as a kid was Bosom Buddies with Tom Hanks, and the original theme song was My Life by Billy Joel. And you know, just for some reason, I just have never really bought his records on wax, but I got The Stranger recently, and I love it, of course. But he's one of those artists. I mean, if you haven't made a record since the early 90s and you're still selling out stadiums, you've done something right.
Yeah.
You know? And he's still doing that. So, you know, he doesn't need to make any more records. It's been proven. He can just go play all the, he has so many good songs that he can do that.
That's something that I never like realized until like maybe a year ago, that like he put out like 7 or 8 studio albums, and I think it was 89 was the last one, and then he's like, I'm out. I'm done. Yeah, yeah. I'm done making records.
I don't know the specifics. I know Michael does, but yeah, still, I mean, it's been, let's say, late 80s, early 90s.
Yeah.
Has not made another record since, and he still just crushes it. I mean, good for him. That's just the power of music and the power of a good song.
Yeah. Well, so one of the things I love so much on those records is the production. Like, you put those records on and you can really hear the bass and the drums. You know? It's that those records sound great.
They sound really good. I mean, and he's just one of the best American songwriters ever.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'd put him up there in the top 20 at least, you know. And that's as somebody who hasn't like really done deep dives on his albums, you know. Something I need to do. And I'm sure Michael is rolling his eyes right now at me because I haven't.
he's screaming at both of us.
He's like, how dare you?
You don't know Billy.
Billy is going to curse you now. Okay, moving on. Our next email is from Andrew Belly. He says, hey, Ethan, Clint, and Paul, and we'll say again, and Brad.
Hello.
I wanted to say congratulations on the 300th episode. I would have loved to have sent a voice message, but I just missed it. As everyone has said, thanks so much for all you do in the community that you have both built from the ground up. Feel proud to be a patron. Thank you very much, by the way, of one of the best podcasts anywhere in the wide world. Well, the world's pretty wide, and we're grateful for that. I got on the ride in early 2017, and I still love listening to the episodes, wearing my OG t-shirt with pride, and I'm forever grateful for the opportunity to do the Metal Tales with Clint, which is almost 2 years ago now. Wow. That does seem, well, if we're canceling out the last 2 years, that just happened yesterday.
Exactly.
Amazing how quickly it all goes by. As always, thank you. Stay well. I'm looking forward to seeing what the future brings. Andrew Belly, Melbourne, Australia, New Jersey. Well, good day, mates. Well, thanks, man. That really is nice of you to say, dude. And no worries on not getting the voice message for 300th episode. We had a few people that kind of sent in similar emails like this. We're grateful for all of you who keep supporting the podcast. It's still kind of mind-blowing that we've hit 300 episodes and we're at 302 now. And we're still going. What do you think about that, Brad? We're still going.
I love it. I've Who mentioned it earlier about, he said he felt like a child of Metal Up Your Podcast.
That was Michael, yeah.
Yeah. We're the same thing. Me and Brad Lyons with the Single Podcast Theory, we're definitely a child of Metal Up Your Podcast.
That's right, yeah. And so, if you're, yeah, stupid of me to not bring it up at the top of the show, but if you're a Pearl Jam fan, check out Single Podcast Theory. I mean, most of you know Brad, know that he does that, but if you did not, now you do, and you need to check that out.
Yeah. Well, we definitely were born of you guys.
Well, listen, Clint and I just like to birth a lot of babies. This is what it is. we're in our prime right now, man. Pushing out kids left and right.
No, I need a Metal Up Your Podcast party in my life. If there's plans for that, I know you guys have been busy and COVID kind of fucked us the last couple of years, but
that's right. Yeah,
I'm hoping for a new one.
Yeah, we've definitely talked about it a little bit. We need to start kind of honing in more on what to do, whether it be in January when the normal anniversary is, or maybe we make up for the last 2 years and wait till like spring and do some big like barbecue in a park or something. We're not really sure yet. We do want to do one, you know, because we had to cancel the last two, or really not even cancel. We just didn't do them. Never even planned them, you know, because of it. Yeah. But I know that, you know, if we do our normal one, we are going to move venues, because last time at that place, the Cobra, they went back to making it smoking, which a lot of people did not dig. Mm. But we have a great spot that's one of my neighborhood bars I go to called Vinyl Tap. And I know the owner pretty well. He's actually a neighbor of mine. They've got a great room. It's a bar and a record store. So what more do you want? You know? And there's some tables outside. They got a stage, a PA. So it'd be a perfect space for that. We could pack it out, have a good time. So I'll get with Clint, you know, here over the next couple weeks and months, and we'll start to plan out something. So maybe it'll be January. Maybe we'll push it back a little later. We're not really sure yet.
Cool.
But I'm looking forward to it. I want another party in my life too. You know, those are really fun.
And
the last two Januaries, it's been a bummer not to be able to do them. Yeah. So,
well, last week I was in Nashville and I went to the Nashville Biscuit Company, something like that.
Nashville Biscuit House?
Yeah, I think so. And it's like literally across the street from Cobra. And I was like, oh, I know where I am.
Yeah. Okay. I don't know that place. I think that's a different spot. The Nashville Biscuit House is right by the Kroger off of Gallatin. Oh,
no, this is like literally you could throw a rock down the street at Cobra. It used to be like a check cashing place. And now it's
okay.
Nashville Biscuit House, or I don't know, Biscuit Company. Really good biscuits. You heard it here first, folks.
This is the place to get biscuits. Brad just told us. All right, let's put a little bookend on this and get to our last email.
Another email. This is from Mark Potter.
And this is good discussion, by the way.
Yes, definitely. Dear professional gentlemen, what in the flippin' fuck? Yesterday, the details of the Guns N' Roses Use Your Illusion Deluxe box set was announced, and I immediately checked it out, and I was disappointed big time. $259 for both Use Your Illusion albums plus 5 CDs of live material along with a bunch of extra swag. Not a single demo, outtake, or B-side to be found. And to add insult, the double CD version of each Illusion album includes live material that's not on the big ass box set. Again, what the flippin' fuck, Chuck? What a scam. This box set could have been on par with the Metallica box set, but someone screwed the Chihuahua instead. I'll be saving that $259 for the Load box set. Your thoughts? Mark Potter, Cheesebag, Oklahoma, New fucking Jersey. P.S. Clint, congratulations on Great White Light. As I listen in the dark with my eyes closed and my headphones on, the music surrounds me and I feel as if I'm floating. The atmosphere created by this wonderful collection gives me a sense of longing for the past while holding out hope for the future. High five on the side.
Dang, well, that's a great album description right there. That's a great user experience. Well, so Brad, what do you think about this? Have you looked into this Guns N' Roses thing? I saw it got announced last week or whatever, and it seems so what he didn't mention was that the mega box set, like the main deal, is like $500.
Yes, and I think it's got two live shows on vinyl.
Right.
in addition to Use Your Illusion 1 and 2 on vinyl, and then all the extra stuff.
Yeah. But he's right, though. There's not like, there's these B-sides. So on one end, I'm thinking like, okay, this is pretty expensive.
Mm-hmm.
You got to be a really hardcore fan to dish out even $250 for the albums and the 5-CD thing.
Yeah.
On one end, it's like, well, they just don't, you know, there's no more B-sides. You know, they put out that tune a few years back that was from the Appetite Sessions. I would think if there was extra left over from Use Your Illusion, they would have put it on here. Or Axl wasn't stoked with it and didn't want to put it on there.
So it does seem
like quite a lot of money for basically the albums plus live stuff. And that's
right. It. Yeah.
And the swag stuff. Sure.
It's super expensive. The Appetite for Destruction box had a ton of like B-sides and demos and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So it is interesting that this one is not going to have any of that. You know?
Yeah, it's really weird. I don't know to go as far as say it's a scam like Mark has or not, but it does seem like for that much money, especially if you're a mega fan going for the big $500 box set, it's a great piece. It looks awesome. There's a ton of cool extra stuff in there, little laminates and flyers and things like that, kind of how Metallica's done it. But it does seem like, you know, with Metallica box sets, you've got like the riff tapes, you've got mm-hmm. early demos.
Interviews,
rough mixes, all that kind of stuff. I just don't know enough details about it to know if it was something that maybe there were really cool things they wanted to add to it, but maybe it got shot down by someone in the band. I don't know.
Yeah. Or they just, I mean, there's a lot of songs between those two albums. There might not be any extra missing songs, but I'm not I don't go that deep with Guns N' Roses. I don't know if they have like a bunch of demos and unused stuff like on YouTube. But it is kind of strange that there's none of that stuff on this one.
Yeah.
I did see there's like five different versions of this thing you can buy. There's a version where it's just Use Your Illusion 1 and 2 on colored vinyl. Mm-hmm. Have you seen that? Those look really cool.
Get those.
Yeah, those look really cool. And I think they were like $130 for both of them. Which is a lot too. It's a real lot.
I mean, but I just saw the last reissue of Use Your Illusion 1 and 2, which I should have picked up. I didn't. It was somewhere in Iowa. I can't remember where, at a record store. And they were like $30-$35 bucks each.
Yeah.
You know, cuz they're going to be a double LP per album.
Mm-hmm.
I thought, man, $70, I should have just got those, cuz if the reissues are going to be $130, you are getting obviously four records technically, but
yeah.
You know, it is a bit of a tough time to be a vinyl collector because it's just only gone up.
Yep.
You know?
Oh, I know.
I know you've only been doing it a couple of years. Yeah. But I mean, I started collecting 23 years ago. And I'm buying Master of Puppets on vinyl for $6, like an original pressing.
Right.
You know, now that's going for whatever, $60-$80.
Yeah.
It's pretty wild.
Well, I think I've told you, I had like an original GNR Lies that mm-hmm. I bought, you know, when it came out, just to play it at my dad's on his record player. And I sold it a couple years ago for, I don't even know, $50 maybe.
Yeah, totally.
And now you can't find them for under $100.
Yeah, man. The one GNR release I have that's a really cool piece to have is it's called Live Era.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's three or four LPs, and it's basically a ton of live stuff from 87 to 93, I believe.
Yeah.
And for about 3 days, I put it on Discogs for sale because the last one sold for like $475.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a,
and I was like, man, if I put this up here, I can, you know, I could get a cool pedal for my pedal or something. I don't know. I was just kind of like, and then I remember I was telling Clint about it. He's like, man, take that down. he's like, that's just a really cool piece to have. You should hang on to that.
Yeah. You're
probably right. So I took it down, but.
And it's only going to go up in price.
Yeah, I mean, I don't see them reissuing a live record they put out in 99, you know.
Right.
I bought it in 2001. I bought it for like $25.
Right. Yeah, it's crazy.
But that's the cool thing about, you know, the era of I got into collecting vinyl was everything was so cheap, man. I could go mm-hmm. to any shop in Nashville when I first moved here and find, I mean, I would walk out of there and spend like $100 and I would have like timeless albums that are now all worth a decent amount. Nothing astronomical. That Guns N' Roses thing is probably the most valuable one I have.
Yeah.
it's like between that and the Alice in Chains self-titled. But man, it's tough now. Like, I mean, I'll still buy records on the road, and I try to just buy used stuff, stuff that was mass produced, you know, like, let's just say like let's say a Billy Joel record, for instance.
Right.
You know, I'm sure you can find a used copy of one of his biggest records for pretty cheap.
Yes, definitely. You know, but
anything reissue though, it's like, you know, I mean, I just got the Alice in Chains Dirt reissue in the mail last night, 'cause I just got home, but, you know, and that's like whatever it was, $32 or whatever, you know, it's a double LP, which is great. It's, you know, and it's one of my favorite records of all time. So I'm sure, of course I'm going to pay for that, but everything's just so much more expensive now. So,
oh yeah, definitely.
But it's also a matter of being smart too. It's like, okay, well, I'm going to maybe buy this whatever reissue record. I don't love the band, but maybe I'll hang on to it and turn a profit later. But I also have feelings on flippers too. So
yeah.
Not a fan, you know?
Yeah.
It's one thing if you've had a record for 10 years or something, you're like, man, I haven't listened to this thing in 10 years or 8 years or whatever.
Yeah.
And then you're like, well, maybe, you know, I'd rather someone else enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
On the other hand, you know, 10 years might go by, or I might be going through my record collection. Or there's this great feature in the Discogs app. If you go to your collection and you shake your phone, it brings up a random record.
Yeah.
And it's kind of a fun way to maybe listen to records at home if you have a bigger collection like I do. And then you kind of remember, oh yeah, I do have that on vinyl. And that's fun to revisit some tracks off that. But anyways, I digress. Well, listen, if you're a huge Guns N' Roses fan, you're probably going to buy something of these. I may go buy the... just the two records when they come out, or maybe I can still find the last reissue and get it for cheaper. I don't know,
dude.
Yet.
I'm just a sucker for the colored vinyl. I just, there's something about the colored ones and the splatter ones and all that stuff. I love just having like this. It's in my mind, it's the special edition.
Yeah, know? For sure.
And these ones look cool because one is there's a yellow album and an orange album. And then two, there's blue and a purple album.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
So I'm like, oh, that like fits the, you know, the album covers, and they just look really cool. I've got the black reissues from a few years ago, but those color ones look really fucking badass.
Yeah, especially if like whatever vinyl pressing plant they get it done at, especially if they can get it done to where the color really gets close to the artwork.
Yeah.
You know, I've read a couple things online that the orange Alice in Chains Dirt colored vinyl, and now these might be some super nerds, I don't know, that are like, it's not quite the orange, whatever. Maybe I got the black one because the other two variants were already sold out on their website when I went to order it. But I mean, I love colored vinyl too. I'm not as picky, I guess, because I just want the record and want the songs, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
But the color stuff is really cool. You know,
if it's $200 for the colored one and $20 for the black one, I'm good with the black one.
Agreed. Yeah, totally. Yeah, there's that big of a price jump, and of course, you know.
Yeah.
Well, listen, Guns N' Roses fans, go get that if you want it, or don't. It's fine. No judgment on either side here. Well, that's going to do it for the email corner, and I don't feel right calling it the portal without Clint here, so unfortunately, we're not going to be off into outer space screaming that.
That's fine.
Well, obviously the best way to get a hold of us is metalupyourpodcastshow@gmail.com. We check that every single day, multiple times a day, maybe a little obsessive, maybe not. But that's the best way to get a hold of us. Shoot us an email. Give us your thoughts. Are you going to buy the Guns N' Roses thing or are you not? You know, I don't know yet until it comes out. I'm not been doing the $500 thing, I can tell you that. But anyways, that's the email portal corner, excuse me. And we're going to move on. We're going to talk about our first Metallica shows here with Brad Blazek. Stand by.
Hey everyone, Clint and Ethan here, and we want to tell you about a little thing called Patreon. Patreon is an easy and interactive way to support the people who make the things that you love.
For as little as $5 a month, you can ensure that Metal Up Your Podcast can continue to grow in quality and content. That's equivalent to a cup of coffee or a beer once a month.
Not only is it easy and affordable, but we've made it a priority since day one to give back to our Patreon community. We've given away deluxe box sets, rare vinyl, Black and Whiskey,
concert tickets to S&M2 and Slain Castle,
all four of our Cover Our World Black and EPs, 26 quarantine covers, and Lunar Satan demos,
invitations to exclusive Zoom happy hours, the ability to ask our guests like Jay Weinberg of Slipknot, Lizzie Hale, and members of the Metallica crew your very own questions,
and eligibility for our Metal Tales series, where you can be a guest on Metal Up Your Podcast and tell us all about a notable Metallica show you've been to.
Subscribe to Patreon today and immediately get access to years worth of bonus content.
Thank you for supporting the people who make the things that you love. Peace.
Adios.
I can't talk about it anymore. It's giving me a headache.
Here, take two of these.
Ah, Nuprin. Little. Yellow. Different.
All right, here we are back with Brad Blazek. We are going to talk about our very first Metallica shows in as much detail as we can remember, because for me it's been longer, but you know, it's still been, what, 5 years for you?
Yeah.
Brad is going to walk us through his perspective to tell the real truth of what happened. Because this is also where you and Clint met for the first time. So,
yes. Yeah.
He's going to walk us through his show, which was at Busch Stadium in St. Louis, June 4th, 2017.
Yeah, I had one snake pit passes, got that email and freaked out and didn't have anybody to go with me. So right. I immediately thought of you guys, sent you an email and said, like, I have one snake pit pass. You guys are going to have to fight over it. Don't make me choose. And thankfully, unfortunately though, for you, you were on tour, I think in Europe, and you emailed me back pretty quick and was like, Clint can have it. I'm not going to be home.
Yeah.
Clint emailed me back, super excited. Long story short, he was able to make it. And it was kind of funny because me and him, we had been texting and then we just got on the phone and we're talking to each other and we both like hung up. And my wife was like, you don't know this guy. Like, are you sure you want to just go hang out with him all day? He might be like a serial killer. And
a serial killer that hosts a Metallica podcast.
that's what I told her. I said, well, I kind of know him, don't know him, but kind of know him. And I found out later his wife had the exact same concerns about me. So
I'm sure. Yeah. That's the funny thing. Sorry to interject real quick, but
yeah,
that is kind of the funny thing about doing a podcast like that and becoming friends with people that are listeners of the show.
Mm-hmm.
At a certain point, you know, your wives, who in general are smarter than us,
right?
at least in my case, is that, you know, they're kind of a voice of reason. It's like, hey, I know you're going to meet up with this person, but you don't know them.
Right.
Like, you know, and now it turns out, you know, like the people we have met up with have all been great and stuff like that. Yeah. My wife has now met a bunch of people. She's met you, met Namara, right. Hari, all sorts of people. So it's all good.
Yeah. So, but we met up at the show, got the wristbands, and I had one of the VIP things. So I got to go, into the Metallica Museum.
Right.
And I'm sure a lot of people listening have probably been there, but if they haven't, it's worth the money to get into that museum. I saw some really amazing stuff. They had guitars, you know, set up and picks everywhere. They had one of Lars's drum sets. When I went, it was the purple drum set. I was hoping for the Justice era drums.
Oh wow.
But I got the purple.
So it was
it was a
purple one, which is the yeah. same color as the one he was using.
Yeah. Was it
orange one from the Death Magnetic era?
You know what? I think you're right. I think it was the orange one and he played the purple set that night. That's what it was.
Yeah.
But I saw like there was so much stuff, you know, to see in there. They had these like road cases where you could pull out drawers and the drawers were all covered with like plexiglass. But, I mean, there's all kind of pictures and flyers and backstage passes and just anything you could think of in these road cases. And the coolest thing for me was all the original handwritten lyrics for the Justice, all the songs on Justice.
Yeah.
And I've seen like the photocopies of those. They come with the Justice box set.
Mm-hmm.
But these were like the real ones, you know what I mean? Like the actual pieces of paper. So that kind of blew me away.
That's pretty cool. I feel like they could, you know, at a certain point, maybe when it's time to retire or something, I feel like in the Bay Area, they could open up a full-time Metallica museum. Because the stuff they had on the road isn't even probably the tip of the iceberg of what's at the HQ or in their like storage warehouse or whatever they have.
Yeah.
You know, and or maybe stuff, who knows? Maybe Lars has all this stuff in a safe at home. I don't know. But they're one of those bands that they've been around for so long and there's so much cool memorabilia they could easily open up. And if it existed in, let's say, you know, where HQ is or something like that, or maybe they turn HQ into a museum. I don't know.
Right. Yeah.
I would go there every time I was in the Bay Area.
Yeah, totally.
And I think most Metallica fans would.
Yeah. And I forgot to mention about the instruments. Like, you could strap on these guitars and play them. And you could get behind large drums and play them.
Wow.
So
that's pretty cool, man.
It was awesome. It was really, really cool to do that. I kind of, because this was my first show, I kind of splurged on getting the VIP. I couldn't afford the meet and greet, but I got the like the next one down, which was the museum and a t-shirt and a poster and like, I think I got early access to GA, but then I got the Snake Pit pass anyway.
Yeah, totally.
So, but yeah, so then, I don't know if people remember, I was sitting around in this little, they had like food set up, you know, you could, they had like a dinner set up for the VIPs, and Clint like texts me, he's like, "Where are you?" And I'm like, "I'm sitting in this room." He's like, "I'm sitting with some other people in that same room, like come and find me." And, he tells the story better than I do, but like he kind of accidentally like made his way into the VIP area without realizing it.
Right. Well, that's because, also the show that he met our friend Wes for the first time.
Yes. Yeah. So, but because he had the Snake Pit pass on, like he was just asking security, "Where do I go? I've got this wristband. Where do I go?" And they basically told him to go into the VIP area.
So he got it for free, essentially.
Yeah, he basically got in for free.
That's
so
amazing.
But it, I mean, he deserved it because he was out in the rain. It started raining on everybody outside, and he was like completely soaked. So it was he got to come in there, and we were just doing the like, okay, because they're like, "Everybody line up. We're going to let you into the Snake Pit." And they're like, "Put your wrist up, show us your wristband so we know." Now, he doesn't have any of the two other wristbands that you're supposed to have for VIP. But I'm like, "Don't worry about it. We'll just go with the flow." And we just walked right past security. And, you know, we went down, got into the We were like, "We got to hurry. We got to run. We got to be on the rail in the Snake Pit because, you know, everyone's going to be, you know, crammed in there." And there was none of that. There was no like running, and like we walked in and it was just like the Snake Pit is this very small section right in front of the center of the stage, and it was just chill. People were just kind of hanging out and not like worrying about the rail so much. And
that's cool. I mean, seems like everyone's being real respectful and stuff.
Totally. So we just kind of hung out, and Local H opened the show. They're like a two piece.
They're awesome.
Alternative grunge band from the 90s. And I mean, I love those guys. I'm not like super deep into them, but when I heard that they were going to be opening, I was like, "Oh, this is cool. I like those guys."
Well, you should check out some of their more recent records, because like they had their kind of one big song in the 90s, but man, their newer records are real heavy and real cool, man.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I definitely got like back into them after going to this show.
Yeah.
And what was cool for me is like, I play the drums kind of, sort of like I taught myself how to play the drums, but I don't know a lot of the like technical stuff. So to have Clint standing there, and I'm asking him questions about, because you know they're a two piece. It's a guitar, a guitar, and drums. This dude's playing some sort of weird setup with like two separate amps, I guess, or to make a bass type sound and the guitar sound.
Yep. He actually has a. I found a. It's not done by Premier Guitar. the YouTube page, but there's a like a rig rundown on that guy from a couple years ago, and he goes through his guitar he plays, and he actually has a bass pickup installed in the guitar.
Okay.
That just is underneath the two low strings.
Right.
So it's pretty wild. His whole setup is really crazy. And yeah. Like, but it's not like you look at certain guys like, you know, I'll take like Matt Bellamy, the guitar player and singer of Muse, right? He's got a crazy rig, you know, that's mind blowing, and it's like built so perfectly well and meticulously and all that stuff. This dude, it's like he does it all himself. Or I think he has maybe a friend that installs the pickup, right. But you look at his pedal board and it's just like unorganized and it's just chaos. But he's done it the same way forever and it works for him.
Yeah.
So you know, you can't really argue with that. And then they sound super cool when they, you know, play live.
And because it's just these two dudes and there's just, you know, a really basic setup, they're on this giant Metallica stage and it's just the two of them real close together, real close to the end of the stage, you know? So it was just it was just cool to see them open the show. They kind of had some it was raining on and off all day. So they kind of had at some point it started raining kind of hard and they were, you know, one of their buddies like ran out and was trying to cover up the amps and stuff. They got through it. They sounded great, you know. Yeah. And when the one big hit Bound to the Floor started playing, Clint was like, oh yeah, I know these dudes.
Yeah. Well, they only really had the one hit and it's a great song, but man, they have so many other good songs.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Well, they had another song, me being the Pearl Jam nut. They had that song about Eddie Vedder that I think was on that same album as Bound to the Floor.
Oh.
They had a song where he was singing like, you know, if I was Eddie Vedder, would you love me better? Or something like
that's
that.
That's right. Forgot about that one.
It wasn't a huge hit, but for me, you know, like, oh, he's singing about Eddie Vedder. You know, I got to hear this song.
I'm listening. Yeah
exactly.
Yeah, they're definitely a cool band. Yeah. If you haven't heard Local H, everybody, definitely go check out even their most two recent records.
Yeah.
It sounds nothing like Bound to the Floor.
No, they are heavier and they're still around, you know,
they just played here in Nashville a few months ago and we were gone and I was super bummed. I couldn't go. They played at Exit Inn.
Yeah.
And then I don't know if it was low ticket sales or what happened, but it got moved across the street to the end, which is only I'm guessing it was ticket sales, which is a bummer because they're such a great band.
Yeah.
But yeah, the end here only, I think the cap's like maybe 200.
Yeah.
Something like that. It's a small club. It's kind of Nashville CBGB. It's like real dirty punk rock kind of place.
Yeah. I saw a band there a couple years ago and I had never been there before. And when I walked in, I was just like, is this it? Where's the venue? Like, this is the bar. You know, I thought I was just at the bar. And
it's been
like,
there for a long time, man. Yeah. I've probably played, I don't know, 20 or 30 times at the end in the last 20 years. And it's one of those places that's like, at first you're like, oh, I got to play the end. But then you play and you're like, man, that venue's kind of cool. It's just a dirty punk rock venue.
Yeah.
Cheap beer. It's in a cool location, so you can get food around there and stuff like that. But yeah, that was where the Local H played last time they were here. And I was so bummed I was out of town for it.
Yeah. Yeah, I wish I could have gone to that. It must have been on a weeknight when I couldn't make it down to Nashville and back for work the next day. But they also had, you know, the candy machines where you put a quarter in and it like candy will come out one of those plastic balls.
Yeah.
Plastic things. They had earplugs and I was like, oh, that's perfect.
Yeah. That's very old school. Just like a candy machine with earplugs in it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think Exit Inn had that for a while, but now you can just buy them at the bar or whatever.
Yeah.
Dude, me and Paul experienced that last week when we went to see Slipknot here in town.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which was amazing, by the way. I saw him one time in Australia, speaking of, and when we were walking in Bridgestone Arena, I have like, I had these like molded earplugs made that are like, are decibel reducing earplugs molded in my ears. And they're like, it's like a 15 dB reduction. And I always take them if I go to shows just cause I don't want, you know, my hearing's already kind of shot.
Right.
I don't want it to get any worse.
Yeah.
But, we're walking to our seats and all of a sudden I was like, oh damn it. I forgot my earplugs.
Yeah.
I know exactly where they are at home. And we sit down and like Jay Weinberg, shout out to Jay, by the way, got his tickets, got his amazing seats. We sit down in our seats. We saw Nick Raskulinex there, who I know, and we chatted with him for a little bit. Then we sit down next to this dude, and I think we were on the edge of where all the guest list seats were, because this guy was like Slipknot shirt, Slipknot hat, going crazy the whole show. And most of the time, if you're a guest of the band, you're not going nuts. You know, you're there to support your friend or whatever. I mean, we were having a good time. Don't get me wrong. It's an amazing show. But as we sit down, I look over in the cup holder. This guy has an entire jar of earplugs. Not just like, oh, I got an extra pair. He had a whole jar full. Like,
wow.
He hit Walgreens on the way to the arena. So we were like, hey, man, can we buy a couple pair of those off of you? He's like, oh, no, man, have some. We're like, sweet. So,
yeah.
I mean, they were the squishy kind, so everything's muffled.
Yeah.
We kind of pulled them out a little bit so we got some clarity. But, man, what a good show that was. Anyways, earplug tangent. Sorry, everybody.
Yeah. No, I saw Pearl Jam twice last weekend. They were in Nashville and then St. Louis. And I completely forgot my earplugs for the St. Louis show. I had them in Nashville because I always, it's like every time I go to a show, I've got like the checklist and the earplugs are on there. And I sat down at the St. Louis Enterprise Center or arena, and I'm like, oh, earplugs. So
yeah, that's enough. Speaking of shows, I missed because of touring. I was out of town for that Pearl Jam show, which is a bummer because I've got friends in that camp, and I could have gotten some good seats for that one. But that's all good. I saw them a few years ago.
They were amazing, and I've been to Bridgestone, I don't know, 10 or 15 times. I don't think I've ever seen Bridgestone that packed.
Yeah,
I mean, it was complete, like floor. There was like no empty seats, and they'll sell seats behind the stage because they don't really have a backdrop or.
Oh, that's right. They do that. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, they had the entire place was just completely packed. It was crazy.
You think at that point they would just do in the round shows, kind of like Metallica does.
Yeah.
You know, if you're already selling the seats behind the stage.
Right. Yeah. Why not?
But man, that's so cool. All I have to say is listen to Local H.
Yeah, okay, so back to Metallica. So Local H was awesome, but after that it starts getting dark. Snake Pit starts filling in, you know, and me and Clint just chatting, just, you know, becoming new friends, you know.
That's right.
But I was like, I'm telling you, dude, I know we just met, but I might start crying when Ecstasy of Gold starts playing, just so you know. And he kind of just like chuckled at me. And, but then Ecstasy starts and I'm like, you know, 25, 30 years of listening to Metallica and listening to bootlegs and watching the, you know, Binge and Purge box sets and hearing that music live and, you know, the lights are all going down. It was super emotional, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
And I'm pretty sure Clint says he had the same kind of reaction, you know?
Next thing you know, it's an I love you, man moment.
Yeah, pretty much.
This is amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but then they go into the Hardwired intro, and then they, you know, they just like kick off with Hardwired.
Yeah.
Which was amazing, you know, because this was the stadium tour where they had these giant, those giant screens.
Mm-hmm. Big screens, like, the big M and the A on the end.
Yeah. And it was those panels of screens. So they're during the Hardwired intro, they're just showing like flashes of the album, those faces, those weird distorted faces.
Yeah.
And they're just like flashing all over on those screens. And it's just like, I mean, they know how to build you up, you know?
Yeah.
So it was pretty cool. And I love Hardwired, the song.
Oh, so, yeah, dude. I mean, the whole record's amazing. I mean,
and we are on the rail of the Snake Pit. And like James is like 5 feet, maybe 10 feet, maybe something like
that.
And the angle of the stage and where we are, Lars is behind him, but we have to look between James' legs to see Lars.
Hot.
Yes. I saw a lot of James' black jeans that night for the first few songs.
I swear we're looking at Lars, James.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, to see James in person 10 feet away, and Lars like 20 feet away playing. I mean, it was amazing. Yeah. And to see Robert and Kirk, you know, 10 mm-hmm. feet on an angle, either direction. It's just one of those, it's that feeling of like, I've been watching these guys for 20, 30 years, like on TV.
Yeah.
But then to see them in person right in front of you playing and sounding great, it's just such a weird, like, Matrix type moment where it like all like gels together, you know,
it's
to
like,
see
it's
them.
It's like seeing a superhero in real life.
Yeah. 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 Exactly. Exactly. You know,
it's like us listening to all these Metallica records for most of our lives is similar to, you know, reading a comic book and all of a sudden that superhero appears, you know?
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
That's how I felt when I first saw them in Australia. It was just like, and I wasn't that close. And I was like, oh my God, there they are, you know?
Yeah.
Or even when I met James back in whatever that was, 02, 01, just like seeing him right there, like, oh my God, that's him.
Yeah.
Like in the flesh. It's so surreal.
It is surreal. That's like the perfect way. It's just so crazy to see them. And what was cool was for like the first two songs, because they go, you know, they were playing Hardwired into Atlas Rise. And Atlas Rises, I think that's my favorite song on Hardwired. I absolutely love that song. And I know here recently they've pretty much quit playing it. But
yeah,
for me,
they're usually just doing Moth in the Flame now.
Yeah, yeah. But for me to get Atlas Rise was like, this is amazing, because I love that song so much. But what I was saying is, for those two songs, they pretty much stayed in their little sections. You know, James was like right in front of us. Kirk's over here. Rob's over on the other side.
Mm-hmm.
But after that, they were like all over the place. Like walking, playing on the catwalk?
The catwalk, yeah.
The part that goes around the actual snake pit. Like they're
it's basically a catwalk.
Yeah, they're just like all walking around during the songs, all over the stage. So that was pretty cool. They weren't just static on the stage and that was it.
Mm-hmm.
They were walking around everywhere.
Right.
So let's see this set list. We get Bell Tolls, which is cool. Love that. Always love that song.
Of course. Yeah.
Then we get Fuel, which I've talked about it before. Fuel is not my favorite song. I don't really like love that song.
But live, it's like
that's what I was like gonna say, dude. Yes. Yeah, exactly. Like live, like I'm like it's so loud, it's so in your face, and it's like I'm into it. Well, and Clint next to me is going ape shit, you know?
Yeah. Well, and on that tour, that's the first time you get pyro on the show too.
Yeah. And we didn't get, I guess we met one of the pyro guys, and he was saying that because there was so much rain, we didn't get the full pyro that
the
rest of the tour did. We got some, and dude, I'll tell you, those giant pyro balls going off like on either side of the stage, it was hot as fuck when those things went off.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
We were so close, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, I was into it. I was like, I love this song.
Yeah, you know, totally. It's my new favorite song, man. Yeah,
exactly. So that was, you know, I don't know. I just kind of have an issue with people that complain about certain songs being played live, because I'm like, do you understand? Like, there's four humans in front of you playing music, and it sounds amazing. And even if it's a song you don't like, how can you not enjoy some aspect of these four dudes? These four dudes are doing it right in front of you.
The five times I've seen Metallica, I've thought to myself, okay, they're about to play Nothing Else Matters.
Mm-hmm.
Not that I think that's a bad song by any means. I love every track on the Black Album. But it's one of those ones they play every show, or like Sandman.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Sandman's maybe a better example. So, you know, they play with Sandman, whatever, last. And you're like, okay, it's Sandman. And then the second they get to Exit Light Into Night, you're just like, hell yeah, this song rules. Like,
yeah,
like, no need to complain, you know?
Yeah, like I just I just live in that moment.
Mm-hmm.
Instead totally, of being man. Like, well, I've heard the song a million times and they play it all every time. And it's like, yeah, but like, I don't listen to Fuel or Enter Sandman on a daily basis, but I don't know, like just to get in my head a little bit, like in that moment,
mm-hmm.
like it's happening live in that moment and I'm there and we're there and they're there playing that song.
Yeah,
it's like, this is the no greatest problem, song ever. Yeah, I'm in.
For so. Sure, yeah. We've often joked about, you know, Metallica live shows where there being like a PP break song.
Right.
You know, it's like, oh, it's, you know, Sabbat True or whatever. Mm. It better not be Sabbat True, actually, but let's say it's, you know, nothing else matters. You know, it's like time to go to the bathroom. It's like, in the moment, I'm like, no, I can hold it. I'm good.
Mm-hmm.
I want to see every bit of this show.
Yeah. Because there was a time when Nothing Else Matter was brand new and it was a cool song to listen to, and all those mm-hmm. like feelings and emotions come back. You know, all those yeah, memories come sure. back as you're watching them play it live.
Yeah.
You know, that's how I feel about it.
Yeah, man. I mean, for me, watching Nothing Else Matters live is like, it immediately takes me back to being in junior high and learning that on guitar.
Mm-hmm.
And that being, you know, one of the first of only a couple lead guitar parts that I could actually play. You know, I mean, there's stuff Kirk does that I still can't do because I've never been a shreddy guy.
Yeah.
But, you know, like Nothing Else Matters solo, like the intro to the Fade to Black solo. Those are the ones when I see him live, I'm like, oh my gosh, dude. Like, I've been studying that song since I was practically a child.
Right. You know? Yeah. Yeah.
It's pretty crazy.
Yeah. Well, then we go into The Unforgiven. Let's see. And is that? No. So Unforgiven, great song. And a lot of these songs have like the big visuals, like I was saying with Hardwired on the intro. But I'm trying to remember if I'm pretty sure Unforgiven showed like parts of the video behind it on those screens.
I remember when I saw that tour, I think there was like an extended intro where like that horn and that snare drum mm-hmm. roll
yes.
went yeah. longer.
Right.
Built yep. it up, built up the suspense a little more, which is cool. Yeah. We all knew what it was coming, but
right, yeah. Then we get Now That We're Dead, and that has the drum solo, the crazy drum circle,
right? Yeah,
drum solo.
That kind of proved to be not as cool as it.
Yeah,
it
I had seen videos of it, and I knew it was coming,
mm-hmm.
and it's just like. Maybe I'm being a hypocrite at what I was just saying about seeing these guys playing live, but to see them just like trying to play the drums, these big, big drums,
yeah.
was really weird and kind of cringy. And it just didn't work. It really just didn't work. And I don't know.
And that's the way to figure it out, man. You know, someone has an idea. Let's just guess and say it was Lars's idea.
Yeah.
Cause it's drums. You know, and in the moment, when if you're the guy doing it on stage, it feels so much different than if you're watching it.
That's true.
On stage, you're like, this is so much fun. We worked out this little, almost like a drum corps thing.
Yeah.
Marching band thing. And it's super, and they're having a good time doing it.
Yeah.
You know, but it doesn't really land, you know.
It sounds like a cool idea. You know, 311 has been doing this kind of thing for like 20 years. Do you know any other band that has done this, that does this drum circle kind of thing?
I know for a long time now, it's been very popular. And what I've kind of jokingly referred, this isn't even really a joke. It's just literally what it is we call downstage floor toms, where a lot of artists, whether the bass player, singer or guitar player, or whatever, are drummers or not. A lot of bands were doing this for a while. And I used to see it a lot in Europe, you know, when I was touring with Kings. That band Haim I saw do, and I found that part kind of boring just as well, where everyone in the band, the drummer's playing some beat, and then all of a sudden the techs bring out a bunch of floor toms,
right?
And you're doing like this big drum circle thing, and it can sound, I feel like it's best executed if everyone is at least a moderately experienced drummer,
because
you can tell. I mean, as a drummer, I can look up and be like I could look at Kirk playing that thing and be like, he's not a drummer.
Right. Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Or whoever it is, whatever band's doing it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the hardcore fans of whoever's doing it, maybe they think that's cool. I look at it more like, well, I get it's kind of a cool transition. It's kind of a cool moment. But I feel like maybe there couldn't have been an even cooler moment to do something else than, I don't know, than the drum circle thing, the downstage floor tom thing. It's just a little, to me, it got a little overdone, you know, with certain bands. And now when Metallica did it, the first part of the tour, they had those massive, what looked like these big tribal drums or something.
Right. They look like acorns, like giant acorns.
Now, aesthetically, it looked awesome.
Yeah, they look cool.
You know, and honestly, the first time I saw it, you know, in Detroit, I was like, oh, that's cool. You know, then like the second, third time, I'm like, okay.
Good. Yeah.
Yeah. Know?
That's one thing. When I saw the videos, I remember thinking like, wow, this goes on forever. But in the moment, seeing them do it, it kind of seemed like it went by pretty quick.
Yeah. On video, for sure, it seemed like it was way longer.
Yeah.
Hey, let's check in with the Titan score real quick. What's the score?
I think it's over. Amanda? Oh, she's gone.
If everyone's gone, I guess it's over.
Yeah.
I guess when we started, it was the fourth quarter.
There was only like, last time I checked, the Titans were up by like 10 with like 4 minutes to go in the game.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So then, yeah, they finished, probably almost an hour ago. Man. Well, it looks like they beat the Raiders 24-22.
Okay. All right.
There you go. They're 1-2 now.
One
Raiders
and two.
Are 0-2. I say all that as not a football fan.
Yeah, I'm a Bears fan. I really don't care about the Titans.
Yeah, so last season I started watching some playoff football with Clint because he's gotten into a lot of sports in the last few years.
Yeah, yeah.
And me and him and Johnny would have nights on the road where it was during the playoffs. The Titans were in the playoffs. So it was like, okay, this is fun.
Yeah.
Hometown team. I don't know anybody on, I couldn't name one player on the team, but like, I'll cheer him on for sure, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'm more basketball, hockey.
Yeah, I'm definitely a fair weather Titans fan.
Yeah,
you know, in a couple months, if they're like doing good and they're in the playoffs, I'll watch every playoff game and I'll root like crazy for them. But right now, week three, I'm like, I really don't care.
Right, totally.
I hope the Bears won today. That's all I care about.
Right, for sure.
So, all right. Yeah, the drum thing is just kind of weird. Then we get Moth into Flame, and then Rome. Let's see.
Always good.
Yeah. Yeah, all of these, I mean, every time they played something, I'm like, this is the best song ever. You know, I was like just so excited and so into it.
That's how a Metallica show feels.
Yeah, yeah. And like I said, just looking up, I mean, because as a drummer, I'm watching Lars 99% of the time.
Right.
If one of the other dudes kind of comes into my periph, I'd be like, oh, there's Kirk, you know? Mm-hmm. Or if it's a solo, I'll be like, okay, I'm going to look for Kirk. But most of the time I'm watching Lars, you know?
Yeah.
And that's like pretty much every concert, I kind of hone in on the drummer, whatever show it is. And again, dude, I know I keep saying it, but it's just like, I would just look over and I'm like, there's the fucking guy,
totally.
I have been, you know, listening to and reading interviews and watching interviews since I was like 15, and like, he's right there and he's doing the thing that he does. You know,
yeah,
it's just like blowing my mind the whole time. So then we get Halo on Fire. And then after that was the Doodles. Is that what we're calling it? The Kirk Doodle.
The Doodle. Yeah.
The Doodles, which they played. They did I Disappear, and then they went into Pulling Teeth, Anesthesia.
Cool.
Which was fucking awesome, because then they went into Whiplash, and I love, I know sometimes Rob will do Anesthesia and then they'll play something else like real thrashy. But to me, because of Kill 'Em All, I love when they go into Whiplash after Anesthesia. So that was pretty awesome. Let's see. What else did they did a, after Whiplash, they did the Murder One and No Remorse, like outro jam.
Oh, cool. Okay.
So, which I like. That's one thing I hear people say, like, oh, they don't play long enough. They don't play enough songs. But they do these jams, you know, and like it stretches the show out, you know, when they do all these like the Kirk Doodle, you know, and
well, if all their songs were 2.5 to 3 minutes long, an 18 song set wouldn't seem like that much. Right. But I mean,
yeah,
you know, I mean, Master of Puppets is whatever, 7.5, 8 minutes long.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think at this point after Whiplash, James was like standing and he was like talking to the audience, and he was talking to, there was like a little kid in the crowd, and it was weird because he even mentioned like, it's weird that I can hear you. Like the kid was like talking back to him.
Yeah.
And he could hear this kid over the crowd. But he was
that like, kid's name Clint Wells?
He like dedicated, I want to say this is one of the like James speeches, you know?
Right. Yeah.
Before Sad But True. Cause it's the, you know, you want heavy.
Totally. You know? Yeah. And he was doing that. He like, you know, he did a thing where it was like, you know, the youngest people in the crowd, oldest people,
right.
See Metallica that's many times, blah, blah, blah.
Yes. Yep.
Yeah. That's always fun.
So Sad But True, fucking, they do. Metallica does give you heavy. they gave me heavy. And then they go into, again, the screens. They start showing like war footage and this kind of cool, like animated thing of like boots on the ground and like troops with their guns over their shoulder and like walking, and you're getting the like intro music to One, and then they start playing One.
Yeah, that was a great intro on that tour.
Yeah. Yeah. But this, I mean, this is like Sad But True, into One, into Puppets, you know,
into Fade to Black, like just
into Fade to Black. And Fade to Black, this was the show that James started playing and his guitar was out of tune. And
oh yeah, that's right. I remember Clint mentioning that.
Yeah, he stopped playing and he's like, it's out of tune. And then he's asked Kirk to like give him an A, and Kirk starts playing, and then like the his tech comes out.
Yeah, Chad.
Which you guys actually talked about this moment in another podcast. And so he tries like to fix it and they're having issues. And then James just fucking kicks. It's one of those acoustic guitars that's on a stand.
Yeah.
And James just fucking kicks it. Like kicks it over. Like, fuck it, I'll do it myself. And he just starts playing it on electric. Playing the intro on the electric.
Which I kind of prefer. He did that for a long time where he played it on electric. And I kind of like dig that. I mean, that acoustic thing is really cool because it's, I think it's a Line 6 acoustic where you can actually digitally change it to sound like a 12 string, a nylon string.
Right.
Or whatever, you know, which to the average person might sound kind of lame, but it's very handy having something like that live.
Yeah.
You know, you're basically, you're not having to bring whatever, 3 or 4 different acoustics on the road with you. But in that moment, when something technically can go wrong with something that digital, then it can get really frustrating, I'm sure. Hence,
oh yeah,
kicketh thy guitar.
Well, what was fun, what was cool for me is like, I mean, he played like one note before Clint like whipped his head around to me and said, his guitar's out of tune. It's out of tune. Yeah. And then James like stopped playing. I didn't know. I don't know the difference. You know what I mean? Like to me, it just sounded like, oh, they're going to play Fade to Black. But man, Clint whipping his head around to tell me was like, oh my God.
That's the curse of being a good guitar players.
Yeah, exactly. And, but then when he kicked that guitar over, we just looked at each other and just like died laughing. You know,
you're like, yep, definitely out of tune. Now it is. Yeah.
So, and I'm noticing here on the set list website that the Metal Police put a note that says restarted due to James acoustic out of tune. And it says E instead of EB. I don't know what that is. E flat. What is the little lowercase B?
That means E flat. Yeah.
Okay. So they actually notated the tuning on this website. So,
well, everything they do is they tune down everything a half step. So instead of E, it'd be E flat, just depending on the song. So anything they've recorded on record in E is E flat live. They started doing that, like, I want to say in the low, maybe late Black Album era, early Load era. But then you have songs like Sad But True that are normally in what's called D standard. So they're going to be in D flat live. It just depends on the song.
Is that to help James?
Probably just longevity of your voice throughout a whole show. Anytime a band detunes live, it's for vocals.
Okay.
Now James can still hit high notes, no problem. But when you're also doing a 2-hour set straight, you know, that's a lot of strain on your voice. You know, Megadeth, they tune down a whole step, so two half steps. So if you know, Hangar 18 is in D minor, it's actually C minor live. It's lower.
Yeah.
And Dave's vocal range is gotten way worse than James's has. Right. But Dave also sang crazy high shit in the 80s and 90s.
Mm-hmm.
Stuff that by the time you're pushing 60 is really hard to sing, you know.
Yeah. See, but my ears.
That's not a knock on Dave. It's just human.
My ears.
How the human body ages.
Right. Yeah. My ears don't hear that kind of stuff. I understand what you're saying, but like, I just hear, okay, they're playing Fade to Black or they're playing mm-hmm. Hangar 18. It sounds the same to my ears.
Yeah, that kind of stuff, people like guys like Clint and I can hear. Like if Metallica hadn't been down tuning this whole time, and then all of a sudden they did, if they started whatever song, I'd be like, that's lower. I can tell.
Yeah.
But you know, I've been playing a guitar in my hands since I was 11. So
right. Yeah. No, but Fade to Black, I mean, it sounded great. After all that, it sounded great. And what's fun is all of that is on the bootleg. The live album, I should say, not the bootleg.
The one you can download?
Yeah, exactly. And they left all that in there, which it's almost like it's better to see it happen, because if you're just hearing, they don't say like, hey, my guitar is out of tune and now we're doing this and now we're doing that. If you didn't see it happen, you kind of don't know what's going on. Even when you hear the guitar get kicked over, you just kind of hear this like explosion and then they just keep playing the song. So if you didn't know any better, you'd be like, what the hell was that noise?
Yeah. I guess if you didn't have the context, it'd be really confusing to listen to and wonder like, what was that big boom? You
know? Yeah. Oh, and then we get the Seek and Destroy to end the set. And this was when Lars had a drum set come out of the, at the end of the catwalk.
That's right. Yeah.
So where we're standing, we all have to turn around and watch them play. And watch them play, because they're facing the rest of the whole stadium.
Right. So yeah. You're basically watching Lars's back.
Yes, exactly. But it was cool. I mean, Seek and Destroy, that's another one that's like so played out, but in the moment and everyone's singing it and they're doing the like call and response.
Yeah.
It's amazing, you know?
Absolutely.
And it's not the 15-minute version. Is it Mexico City? That's like 15 minutes long. Cause James is
there's been certain versions that have gone on and on and on. Yeah.
He's doing the Seek and Destroy to like every member of the rail, you know, just like, so they didn't do it for that long, but that was pretty cool. And then they, you know, wave goodbye and they're gone for a few minutes.
Yeah.
And then we get the encore and they start playing the, which I just found this out. I think it's a bass intro on Battery, isn't it?
Nylon string guitar.
Okay.
I think you're probably thinking of Damage Inc. It's like the it fades in.
That's bass. Okay. Yep, that's what I'm thinking of. Okay. Well, Battery, we get like the intro tape of those, you know, it sounds like strings or something, but
yeah, it's a nylon string guitar.
So you talk about getting like just totally pumped up again when they go into Battery, you know?
Oh yeah.
So Battery, Nothing Else Matters, and then Sandman for the encore.
Yeah.
Which though that was kind of the common
thing on that tour was Thrash Slot and then Nothing Else Matters, Sandman.
Yeah.
Pretty much the whole tour.
Yeah.
And that's a hell of a show, dude.
Dude, it was amazing. I mean, it was just absolutely amazing.
And then didn't you guys drive back to Nashville together or something?
No, that's another thing. I think the wives like secretly called each other because they both were telling us like separately, like, you can't drive home from from St. Louis at, you know, 11 o'clock at night. No, we actually got a hotel. Cause my daughter, Amanda, and her now husband, they came with us and they spent the day doing the arch and the St. Louis thing while we were at the show. Right. So, they ended up getting a hotel and then we went back to the hotel after the show.
Yeah.
But me and Clint both were in the days prior, like, we can make it, we can make it home. We'll be fine. And both of, you know, my wife was like, you're going to be so tired. Like, you can't do that. And I think Clint actually called me. He's like, dude, I need to talk to you. I think we should stay over in St. Louis. And I was like, yeah, you know, my wife just told me the same thing. I think you're right.
So, I mean, me and him and Paul attempted it coming home from Detroit.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. We lasted about 35 minutes.
That's like an eight hour trip at least.
It's
right?
Like 8 or 9 hours. Yeah.
That's crazy.
I think we made it 30 to 40 minutes and then we stopped for food at Taco Bell. And then that just ended the trip right there.
Yeah, totally.
But, well, dude, that's awesome. So your very first Metallica experienced.
Yeah.
Actually, it's past tense. Right? Well, that's awesome, dude. I know, like I said before, we've talked about you and Clint going to that show, but it's good to hear your side of the story, so to speak. And that's a great retelling of the tale of St. Louis. That's awesome, man. Well, so my first show, like I've mentioned before, Australia 2010 on my birthday. Prior to this, I had maybe 5 or 6 chances to see Metallica between living in California and living in Tennessee. And every time I've been on the road, unfortunately, it just kept happening. Even the one that you and I were texting about earlier today was the show where Metallica played in Nashville at Bridgestone Arena where they brought Lemmy out. I missed that show too.
Right.
Missed the show at the basement before they played Bonnaroo, all that stuff. So my first experience ended up turning out to be almost like this great makeup for all that, you know, all those times I missed them. Because I'm in Australia, I was playing in Reliant K, we're on tour, direct support for Paramore, so we're on this really kick-ass tour, all sold-out arenas down there. My wife is with me, so this was like the perfect storm to finally see Metallica. It was like I was owed this. So I wasn't really paying attention to their tour schedule at the time, just because I'm in Australia and I'm thinking, like, you know, whatever. I wasn't offline by any means of Metallica. I was way into Death Magnetic at the time because I was, you know, about two years old at this point. And I can't remember what show it was, but I'm talking to Paramore's tour manager, this guy named Andrew, really awesome dude. And I'm just kind of, you know, the usual questions, kind of, who have you worked for, blah, blah, blah. And he's, you know, listing off a few artists and he says, Metallica. I was like, no way, dude, that's awesome. I'm like, what'd you do? And all this stuff. Well, so then he goes, yeah, I think they're in Australia at the same time as we are down here. And I was like, really? So I look it up and sure enough, I see that we have a day off in Brisbane, Australia on my birthday and Metallica's playing. I was like, oh my God.
That's amazing.
I was like, I have to go. Yeah. I have to. So I talked to Andrew the next day at whatever show we're at, Melbourne or something. And I was like, hey man, Metallica's playing in 2 days on our day off in Brisbane. He looks at me, he's just like, I'll see what I can do.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, like, okay, if it doesn't happen, that's fine. Like, me and the guys and my wife, we'll go out and celebrate and blah, blah, blah. So the night before, whatever city we're in, we play the show, I'm packing up. And before Paramore goes on, he comes over to me. He's like, hey man, by the way, we're good for Metallica. Like, how many of you guys want to come? I was like, I'll let you know by the end of the night. So it was just me, my wife, and then our bass player, John Warren, another guitar player, John Schneck. The other guys didn't want to come. I'm like, fine, dudes, whatever, you're missing out.
Yeah.
I was like, I don't care if you had a surprise party planned for me. I'm going to Metallica.
Yeah.
So not only are we getting in for free, but he goes, oh, yeah, and they're going to send a van over to pick us up for those that don't know how it works, a lot of shows that big, you even smaller shows too, you have what are called runners, just people that are either working for the promoter, working locally. They're assigned like a van or SUV or something, and they're just running, meaning they're going to go pick up stuff for the dressing rooms. Or they want these types of grapes, or you know, the drummer needs a new cymbal. They'll send the runner to the drum shop to get a new cymbal, whatever. So I'm guessing they just use one of their runners and sent the van over to pick us up at our hotel. And we get to the Brisbane Entertainment Center, the arena, and we like full on what felt like VIP style. Like we pull in the back of the venue.
Yeah.
There's, you know, they weren't really using tour buses because you just fly everywhere when you're in Australia for the most part. But there's like a bunch of trucks there, you know, that had all the gear in it prior to when we got there. And it's probably around doors when we got there, like 7 p.m. or something like that, maybe a little earlier. And the head of security meets us and introduces himself, hands us all passes. We're like, holy shit, this is so cool. And he's like, all right, follow me. I'm going to take you guys to like the friends and family room. And we're like, okay. I thought they were just going to put us just out on the floor, like, oh, have fun.
Right.
So they take us backstage and we're walking. And I walk past this room and I just kind of glance over and it was like a little tech room. Like Rob's tech had another little area set up. And I look over and I see him and Rob just standing there like checking out a bass. And we kind of make eye contact. He kind of gives me a nod. I just keep walking. And I was like, whoa, that was Rob Trujillo. That's like, I'm just on cloud nine because it's my birthday.
Yeah.
And, my wife is there. And my wife doesn't like Metallica really. And so she's a saint for coming. And so they put us in like this kind of VIP friends and family room. He's like, yeah, you guys can just chill here. There's a bar here. Help yourself. You know, there's some snacks, blah, blah, blah. And we're all just kind of hanging out like, you know, so the openers were Baroness and Lamb of God.
Oh, man.
I had never really gotten into Baroness. So we were kind of hanging backstage while they were playing. And this is an in the round show because that's all they really do at arenas, you know, they have for 30 years. But so we're hanging back there and we're having a beer and we're just kind of chatting. And then all of a sudden I look up and James walks in.
Oh, man.
And I'm thinking like, am I going to get to meet him again? And the other thing that I did is I brought a thumb drive with me. And me and another listener of the show is a longtime friend of mine, Jeff Fireball. We used to have this local cover band where we would cover metal songs, but like country style, like Johnny Cash.
Mm-hmm.
It was called Motorhome. And I've probably played a clip of it on an episode like years ago. But so what I did was I like mixed down like 8 of the Metallica songs we covered or whatever. And I put them on a thumb drive and I just had it in my pocket the whole time.
Just in case.
Well, I see James walk in and I'm like, okay, if I meet him, maybe I'll just tell him like, hey man, blah, blah, blah. Big fan. Thanks for having us. By the way, did these covers. Cause I know he likes country music. So
yeah.
But he was basically in there. I saw a bunch of other guys in there that had these like cuts on, like leather cuts, like vests, you know, like biker vests.
Yeah.
And it had some like chapter looking thing on the back. And apparently James was a part of that same bike club, but in America. So he was basically just in there to say hi to them real quick. So it was pretty clear he was talking to them and he split. So I was like, all right, dang it, you know, whatever. So we're hanging and then it was kind of like we saw the schedule on the wall and we're like, all right. Let's go back out to the floor and see where they want to put us. Cause I wanted to watch a little bit of Lamb of God. So there are probably 3 songs toward the end of their set. And so the security guy walks us back to the same hallway and he kind of stops us. He goes, hey, check it out. And we walked up to this closed door. This is tuning room. And we hear them rehearsing, Turn the Page.
Mm.
And they're like, man, like I'm standing right outside the tuning room. This is so crazy, you know? And of course, like, you know, even the other 2 guys in Reliant K weren't like huge Metallica fans. This is all me. This is like my paradise.
And they're right. Just like, oh yeah,
supporting me.
Yeah.
And then they're there. It's my birthday. So they're there just to hang, you know, but, so they take us out and cause it's in the round, Big Mick is kind of on this like one end of the arena behind a barricade. So obviously nobody, you know, some circle pit doesn't start and they crash into the front of house console. And so they put the guy's like, yeah, you guys can stand right here. You're welcome to go out there, but there's hardly going to be anybody back here. So you kind of have the space to yourself. We're like, great.
Yeah.
And because it's in the round, we're not that far away from the stage. I mean,
yeah,
maybe, I don't know, like 30 yards or something.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, this is amazing. So, and we still had access to that room so we could go back there and like grab a beer or whatever.
Oh, cool.
I don't think we ever did. I didn't. I was just like, my eyes were on the stage the whole time. And so we're standing there. I look over. I see Big Mick. I'm like, man, this is crazy. Like, you know, didn't get to meet James for the second time, but it's cool. But we got to like listen in on the tuning room real quick. I saw Rob in the hallway. It was like, man, this is so surreal. It's already the best birthday ever, and they haven't started playing yet.
Yeah, totally.
But so, yeah, we watched a little bit of Lamb of God. Like, I was, you know, pretty into it, and they sounded great, you know. And then, you know, you've got whatever 30 minutes before Metallica comes on, and I already start noticing up in the ceiling, up in the truss, all those coffins.
Right.
Because this is the Death Magnetic Tour, and they had, like, the bottoms of the coffins were, like, LED screens, so they had, like, graphics in them and stuff like that. Like, it looked like someone was trapped in it once the show started. But I'm looking up going, man, there's these freaking coffins in the sky. This is so cool. And then same thing with you, man. I'm, like, expecting to hear Ecstasy of Gold and just get, like, the chills, and I totally did.
Yeah.
I mean, I couldn't have, like, hung over that rail any further. I was just like, I'm looking back, my wife's there, two of my best friends are there, Big Mix over there.
Right.
And I'm about to watch Metallica for the very first time. And immediately when the lights go out and the crowd goes crazy and Ecstasy of Gold starts, I'm just like, oh my God, this is just heaven. That finishes, and kind of like the Hardwired tour, you start to get the Hardwired intro and like the screens start doing things.
Mm-hmm.
For this one, you had That Was Just Your Life intro from Death Magnetic. You had that kind of heartbeat going.
Right, yeah.
And the boom, 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 bam, bam, boom, boom, bam. And that's kind of going. It's a little ominous, and the same things kind of happen. There's just like lights are flickering, little things are happening, and you're just like, oh my God. And then it's still on the intro tape where it does the bum, gunk, 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 gunk.
Yeah.
But it's not till the main riff kicks in that all of a sudden the spotlight is on James and it's and I'm just like, oh my God. And they fucking kick into it. And I'm like, if I'm remembering this right, I remember just like pounding my fist on the rail, like looking at everybody like, oh my God, it's happening. I just could not believe, like, I knew I was going to be having the best time. I knew I was going to get real excited, but like that kind of euphoric feeling that comes over you.
Yeah. Yeah.
I just like, it's kind of inexplicable. Like I had not really felt anything like that at a live show before. I'm like watching these dudes are my heroes and I've looked up to since I was like 12.
Yeah. Yeah.
And like, it's,
they look different. Like when you see them, you know, in person, like there's a weird like Matrix thing that happens where you're seeing them for the first time in person.
Yeah, totally.
It's just they look different for some reason.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, well, it's back to that superhero thing, I think. It's kind of just surreal. So it feels, even if I saw a picture of them from the day before, I would still think they look different. It's just like a surreal moment.
Yeah.
You know, like it was just, my brain was just processing this the whole time. Yeah. You know?
And were I know your thoughts on Saint Anger, like when you first heard it, like you took it out of the car and like threw it out or something.
I didn't throw it away, but I remember listening to like the first track and like, and I'd already heard that song, but I was like, okay, surely the snare drum thing is kind of a joke, right? The next song, it kept going through and I was like, wow. And I was that guy. Now I've come around to certain songs on that record.
Right.
I still think the production's terrible. That's just, you know, in my opinion.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I took the CD out and I put it in the case and I just like tossed it in the back of the car.
Okay. So what I'm getting at, when you heard, were you like all in from the moment you heard Death Magnetic, or did it take a minute to get like to get over the Saint Anger of it? You know, like.
No, I was all in, man.
Okay. Yeah.
I was so all in on that record. Well, so I remember down from iTunes, I remember buying, for whatever, 99 cents, you know, downloading the first single and just thinking like, dude, this is awesome. Like,
yeah.
And I remember thinking like, okay, it sounds not, it doesn't sound as bad as Anger, but like there's something different about it. It's real flat sounding. It's like not a lot of ambience to it. Not a lot of bells and whistles on the record production wise. And so I'm like, okay, whatever, you know, but I remember just thinking like, dude, this is so good, especially, you know, certain songs like, you know, End of the Line or whatever, just thinking like, yeah, God, this is, they're back. That's what I felt, you know?
Dude, I remember seeing the track listing, you know, they announced the album and the track listing. And I admit I'm wrong now, but at the time I was like, these songs sound so ridiculous. These song titles, you know, sound so dumb. And because I was still like on that like Saint Anger thing, like they're done, they're over. Mm-hmm. And then I saw these.
People wrote them off.
Yeah, I mean, I did, and I mean, I still love them, but I was just like, eh, they're over, you know. Mm-hmm. And yeah. then this, when I heard this album, I'm like, holy shit, they're back. Yeah. So I'm saying, like, it's awesome that you were like into that album and you get to hear that song as the opening song.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's especially hearing The Day That Never Comes for the first time, because that was like the single.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is funny, they didn't play it at this show. It was like the first single and they didn't play it.
Hmm.
You know, but this yeah. was one of three shows in Brisbane in a row. So maybe they changed out a few things, but I still got a pretty kick-ass set list though, dude.
Yeah.
And I got to say, all I remember during the show, like anything away from the stage, I don't remember. I remember looking over at my wife or my friends and being like, oh my God, you know, or if a certain song started, I'm like, dude, I love this song, you know, and they may not know it. I don't know. I just didn't care. I was just like, I'm fixated on the stage.
Yeah.
Especially James, you know? And so, yeah, I'll run through the set list here real quick. Also, cause I don't have a ton of time.
Yeah.
I gotta edit this episode and go meet up with some friends for a little hang. But, yeah. So intro, That Was Just Your Life, into End of the Line, which is cool. Cause it's similar to the Hardwired thing. They play the first two songs off the record.
Right. Yeah.
Which is real cool. And just like your show, they go into Bells.
Yep.
And so again, not only my first time seeing Metallica, but first time seeing like Rob Trujillo live. So seeing him play Cliff's parts was so cool.
Right.
Then they go into Fuel, which is also first time you get pyro in the set, in this one. Fuel into Fade to Black, and then Broken, Beaten, Scarred, which is a great song. This was a cool one. I got Leper Messiah.
Yeah,
the show.
That is cool.
A little bit different. You know, they were playing it here and there on this tour.
Yeah.
Sabbath True. Then I hear Turn the Page, which is what we were hearing them rehearse when we walked into the tuning room. All Nightmare Long was so freaking good live.
Yeah.
That's such a great tune. Check out these four in a row. All Nightmare Long, One, Master of Puppets, Blackened.
Yeah. Crazy.
Pretty wild. And then this was different than they were doing on the Hardwired tour, but they ended the main set with Nothing Else Matters and Enter Sandman.
Yeah.
So obviously that switched on the Worldwired tour, and then the encore was, this was kind of a common thing on the Worldwired tour. World Magnetic tour. The encore was kind of like the old school slots. You had Am I Evil, Whiplash, and Seek and Destroy.
Right.
And during Seek is when they would release all those black Metallica balls and stuff.
Yeah. Seek was definitely a long like crowd participation thing.
It definitely was. Yeah. I remember them dragging that out for quite a while.
Yeah.
But this was, you know, some of the cool facts from the show. It was the 169th show of the World Magnetic Tour, the 50th performance in 2010. Some of these facts are kind of hilarious. This is only the fourth time they performed in Brisbane. Like I said before, three shows. This was the first time they ever played Leper Messiah on the World Magnetic Tour. Oh, I'm sorry, first time in over a year. My bad. They played it only eight times since October 08. So kind of a treat to get that song, I think.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
First time Turn the Page was performed in Brisbane. Same with Blackened. They never played that in Brisbane before. But yeah, man, overall, it was just like such a fun show, fun night. It was like it was like all the stars aligned. It was like I was on an awesome tour already with Paramore, like sold out arenas, just crowd going crazy. Every show was so much fun on that tour. And then it's like, we have a day off on my birthday and Metallica's playing. Like this couldn't be the more perfect birthday gift, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And having my wife there, having my friends there, and like, I was bummed the whole band didn't come, but I was just like, I don't care if everyone stays back.
Right.
I'll go by myself. I'm going to this.
Yeah, definitely.
Y'all can tag along or not. I still have the, like the sticky that the security guy gave us.
Oh, cool.
I saved that just, you know, it's going to always be one of my most fond memories, not only of live music, but of any birthday I've had, any Metallica show I've seen.
Yeah.
I think that and the Detroit show with Paul and Clint will be the two top ones for me forever.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Birmingham was fun. Obviously, Philadelphia was fun, but like those two, especially the birthday one, I can't. It's like you. It's like it would cost so much money to plan a trip like that.
Like, yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, yeah.
Let's go to Brisbane for my birthday. Yeah. Let's go see Metallica. That would be so much money, but like.
Well, yeah. The last minute of it all is a cool. It's mm-hmm. that makes it even more like special. You know.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I found out like a day, like the day or two before that we were going.
Yeah.
So that was a really awesome, you know, surprise. And yeah, Andrew, I know you're not listening, but if you were, I would say thank you again for such a great night. That was so fun. But well, there you have it, folks. Me and Brad's first Metallica show experiences. How'd you feel about that, Brad?
It was fun.
Good. I'm glad you had fun. Like no, I said before, I thought this would be a fun way for Brad and I to kind of hang out, kind of rehash the past on our first Metallica show experiences. And you know, hopefully it gets, you know, all you guys listening, you know, in that mood of like, oh yeah, what happened the day of my first show and all that stuff. And I don't actually remember what I did that day before the show. I think I was just like, I'm sure we went and got lunch, got coffee and stuff, but like, it's all a blur.
Yeah.
To me, the day started when the van picked us up.
Right. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So, but yeah, hopefully everyone out there can have some fun, kind of rehashing their first Metallica experiences. And Brad, I can't thank you enough for stepping in last minute to cover for Clint.
Yeah, dude. And, I know. This is always an honor for me. I know we've become friends. I'm friends with Clint, but like, I always get the little telling my wife, like, I'm gonna be on Metal Up Your Podcast, like, do you understand what's happening right now? This is so awesome. So I really appreciate you asking me to put me on.
Oh, heck yeah, dude. I'm glad I caught you on a day off from work. And you know, if you weren't available, listen, you were the first person I hit up, put it that way.
Yeah, okay, good. Well, it worked out.
Exactly. Well, thanks everyone for listening, and we appreciate you tuning in every week. Clint will be back next week, and we're looking forward to it. And always, you know, a pleasure to have you, Brad. And take care of yourselves, take care of one another, and I guess this is weird. I'm going to start with adios.
Okay. And what does Clint say?
It's usually peace, adios.
Peace. Yeah. Peace. Okay. All right.
Yeah.
I'll let
Why don't you say peace and then I'll say adios.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Thanks for having me. Thanks for listening. And I'm Brad Blazek. Peace.
Adios.
If you were our advisor, what would you say? Then I would say, delete that.